leaves you notes?
Yeah.
That's fun.
She's writing by herself now, which is crazy to me.
Taking after mom's
that's right.
Profession.
Yeah, maybe she'll get published.
Is the note published worthy?
Right.
Are you sending
I published it on the internet.
Right.
Oh, okay. So she's self-published at this point. It's in the family. You're more of like a Lindsay Lohan's mom.
Yeah, an agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, she wrote me a little note. She left it on my jewelry tray. Said, "I love you, mommy." Mommy is spelled with one M in the middle.
That's adorable. Sweet, yeah, yes. That's cute. Yes.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Excellent. Well, maybe, you know, it's a race now. You and
me
Gray.
Versus Gray. Yeah. There
you go. First to the public.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're back in the studio together.
Woo!
It's been a bit.
Yeah.
So we missed a deadline to publish our podcast. We didn't miss it, but
there was a internet catastrophe that prevented the publishing from happening the way it was supposed to.
There was a statewide catastrophe.
Right.
So.
Yeah, but that the statewide catastrophe was not our immediate issue. It was
right.
The internet situation.
Sure.
Too.
We're not going to name names, David, but
it was me. It's fine. It was me. Yeah.
Yes. So this is our first time to get together to talk about our major winter storm that hit Texas.
Yeah.
All counties in Texas were under a winter storm warning at the same time, which I believe is the first time ever, you know, so.
At least in recorded weather history, yeah.
Sure, yeah, at least in recorded history, so.
There was an ice age once upon a time, who knows? Who knows what happened then?
Ooh, might get to see another one.
I still bet Brownsville was pretty hot down there. That's right on the border.
Yes, we knew where that one was, thank you.
I don't know if you knew, yeah.
I don't know where Brownsville is.
I happen to know where Brownsville is.
It's basically the right on the bottom, the bottom tip of Texas.
Okay.
Yes. So how was the storm for you guys? Everything okay at your homes?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you all. We were very fortunate. We only lost power for a little bit, so a little while on Monday. And beyond that, we were fine. So we just kind of hunkered in and did our best to take care of other people as we could because we got very fortunate that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, same. So we're actually on the grid with the fire department.
Mm,
so
very handy.
We tend to be prioritized in terms of power outages. So we lost for 2 hours and a controlled blackout, and that was it. So yeah. Super, super fortunate.
Yeah.
I know, Elise, you're house hunting, so maybe this is now a question you didn't know you had to ask.
Right.
What power grid am I on?
Right.
Yes. Right. Well, actually, we were looking at the house that we've now under contract on earlier before this, and David said, "Oh, you're right next to a hospital." And I said, "Oh."
Excellent.
Right. Power.
Wonderful. The Nazaroffs had a pretty different story when it came to winter storm. We lost power Sunday night. It did not come back on until Wednesday night.
Eesh.
And by Monday morning, it was very cold in our house. I mean, we live in Texas, so our house is not built to be insulated for the warmth, you know, types of things. It's built to be airy, flowy, you know, things like that. I'm not even going to say it succeeds at that, but that's what it's supposed to do.
Right.
And during a Texas summer. So it was pretty cold. Monday morning, we made the decision to pack up Timmy because he was shivering while eating breakfast and try to make it to Kat's parents' house because they still had power.
Mm-hmm.
And it was snowing. I've driven in the snow, so I wasn't that worried, but, you know, it's still nervous.
Yeah. And Monday was pretty nasty. I mean, you know, roads were not good on Monday, and nobody down here knows how to drive in the snow.
Correct.
I mean, that was,
we
know how to drive in the snow. We've been doing it for years, but
yes.
I don't trust you idiots. No, I mean, you find people who are else.
Hey,
all
I grew up with snow.
Well, the 30-minute drive normally, it's like about 2 hours. So, you know, just going very, very slow, making sure everybody's safe. We made it there, and then they lost power that night.
Oh, okay. So,
we were warm for 30 minutes.
So it's been an experience. We thankfully did not have any pipes break in our house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was an issue for a lot of people in our community and in our neighborhood. And we did have issues where our pipes all got clogged with like sediment and things like that. Since the water turned off and then turning back on, everything gets clogged. So I spent the weekend Googling how to fix all these things.
That sounds like No, it doesn't sound like fun.
It
at
was
all.
Not. Well, like on our little next door app, people were complaining that all the plumbers in our area were charging $500 just for a house visit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, I'm not paying that.
Right. Yeah.
So Google it. How do I take apart a dishwasher? You know,
YouTube
so.
Tutorials.
In the plumber's defense, we live in a capitalist economy, and there is suddenly a massive supply for their limited demand.
And they're saying, power to you, man. They're saying on there that for them to even get supplies, they have to wait in line at a Home Depot for hours at a time. And then the supplies they can get are very limited. So, I mean, you're paying not just for their expertise, but all the effort that they're going into.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, I'm not saying $500 seems unreasonable, but I'm sure for them it's... And also, that's how capitalism works. Supply and demand is a real thing. Yeah, but thankfully I saw that Lord of Life opened its doors to try to take care of the needs of our community here in the Woodlands, but not... a tremendous need here, or as tremendous a
need. Yeah, so fortunately, I mean, this is one of the things that we kind of learned through this process. So if you've been following the power system at all, right? Mm-hmm. So there's this massive ERCOT thing, and that's most of Texas's power, and that's where most of these major power failures were. The Woodlands, and like this weird little strip that kind of runs to the east, is actually on a grid that goes over to Louisiana.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that grid was not as highly affected as other areas. So the Woodlands and kind of the surrounding vicinity down over in some other directions did not have as severe power outages as other areas. Yeah. The immediate area around us, people were doing okay. I mean, plenty of burst pipes, plenty of damage to go around, but we were doing okay up here. So,
yeah, on the last summer hurricane that hit Louisiana, you guys were affected.
Right.
My house was fine. So, I mean, that's kind of the,
trade-offs.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, well, glad everybody's doing okay. We hope all our listeners, everybody's okay there. If you have any needs that you have experienced, please let us know. We would love to figure out ways to help out. Sure. And also, if you would like to make a donation to our pastoral discretionary fund, that can go to people in our area that have experienced major trauma and needs based on the winter storm.
Absolutely, yeah. A number of churches pretty seriously hit down and around here from various stuff. So, yeah, lots of need to go around. And honestly, you know, as someone who's from a state that used to get, well, I don't know, they still get a good amount of snow, right? If you're listening to this and you're like, this is like 2 inches of something, and it, you know, this is like our 6 months of the year, we're like this, we get it, we're not built for that. We're
we
just
don't
not.
Salt the roads, we don't have any.
We don't even know, like, you talk about salting the roads, and people are like, why are you putting table salt on your roads?
Exactly,
like,
that is,
hey, that's not the kind of salt you use. Right. And, So it's
kosher.
Exactly. Kosher.
The pink Himalayan salt.
I mean, so, I experienced this for the first time because we wanted to make ice cream a couple years ago. Mm. And you, at least growing up in Ohio, you would like layer ice and then you would put down salt, which you would use normally during the winter because it would make it colder because that's what the ice does. Is it lowers the melting point. And so it makes everything colder for the ice cream. You can't buy that salt in store. Like, you have to buy like this, like, super whatever ice cream salt that's like $5,000 for a tiny little package, as opposed to getting like the $5 50-pound bag of salt that you can buy up in Ohio. So
you can just buy ice cream too. I don't know if you knew that.
What?
You can just buy ice cream too.
You can buy ice cream, but that's not nearly as much fun as making your own ice cream.
I think we could have a debate about that.
I think the eating of the ice cream is the most fun part of the process.
Have you ever made your own ice cream?
Yes. It's tedious.
I mean, I'm not, like, sitting there, like, hand cranking the whole thing, but, like, you know,
I mean,
getting my daughter involved and stuff like that. Something. When I was a kid, we had to hand crank it, but, you know, I've come into the 21st century.
That's right.
I have an electrical thing.
A successful man. That's right. You can get an automatic ice cream cranker.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. Well, we're going to move on with our news story.
Okay.
Of the week. And this is also about the cold.
Have you ever been... Snowmageddon didn't even make the news.
Yeah.
Well,
it did.
Have you been to Alaska?
Nope.
No.
Me neither.
My brother lives there.
Oh, well, send him this article here.
Pastor John lived there for a while.
Oh, yeah, our new interim pastor.
Should we go get him?
Yes. Alaskan woman uses outhouse. Alaskan woman.
Ooh, man.
Uses outhouse. Attacked by bear from below.
Uh-huh. I did hear about this, and that is terrifying. And I've been having nightmares.
Yeah. Yeah, a friend of mine sent me this article.
Yes, she sat down on the toilet and immediately was bitten on the butt.
By a polar bear. We're laughing, but that's not funny. That's
a
polar bear.
It's a black bear.
Oh, whatever.
But still.
Still not funny. It's Alaska. What other kind of bears? I don't know. Apparently black bears. But I assumed it was
brown. Okay, so it was in a toilet. Are we sure it wasn't a polar bear?
I assumed that it was like
brown. It could be stained. Yeah. Yes.
When I heard
black,
it.
Black bear.
I assumed that it came up like through ice that there were, I don't know. I don't know what happens.
Wow, it's just like they cut.
Like I don't a know shark emerging from the ocean.
I don't know what happens in Alaska. I don't know where their outhouses
like
are built.
Ice
all right?
fishing hole.
Yes.
A black bear getting into an outhouse hole is as unlikely as drilling a hole in ice and having a polar bear come
evidently,
through. I feel like I'm just as legitimate. In my
evidently not. Yes. Her brother, who was with her, came out and saw that she was tending to her wounds.
Sure, as you would.
Opened the sewer, looked in, and saw a bear's head poking out of the toilet.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, so she wanted to tend to her wounds before she got away from the toilet bear?
Oh, the toilet bear couldn't get out of the toilet, I think, is what we're saying. Like,
oh, well, I don't know. I mean, so they got back into their yurt. And
wow,
of course they did.
And and fixed, you know, everything up over there. Minor wounds, some bleeding, but they were able to take care of it without going to a hospital or a doctor.
All right, so what great bear puns do you have for us, Patrick? We know you're sitting on them, so this
let's see. Well, it did attack her bare bottom.
Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And this was certainly a grizzly affair.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Except it wasn't. It was a black bear affair. So.
Well, the saying is, if it is brown, lay down. This is the bear, not the bathroom situation.
Right, yeah.
I thought it was, if it was brown, flush it down. Right.
Yeah, if it's a brown bear, you flush. Yeah. Black bear, you just let that stay.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, if it's a brown bear, you lay down and play dead. If it is a black bear, you fight back. Mm-hmm. So brown, lay down. Black, fight back. So.
So if I get bit on the bottom while on the toilet in Alaska.
Check the color.
And sure. Then decide if I should run or punch.
Sure. Right.
That's definitely not.
Yeah. Running is not an option. It's not if it's brown, run away. If it's brown, lay down.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, you see the brown bear in the toilet, take a little nap, you good.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
Do you guys ever grow up with the fear of the alligator coming up through the toilet? Did you ever hear about that?
Ooh,
or a snake?
Yeah, black mamba. Yeah.
Things coming through the pipes and coming out. Yeah,
I talked to a Peace Corps. I don't know what their title is. Peace Corps agent,
volunteer,
Peace Corps soldier. Sure. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's not soldier, but okay.
Marine.
Sure,
yes.
Right. Mermaid.
I said marine.
Mermaid. A person. Peace Corps mermaid. All right, so the Peace Corps mermaid.
Yes. And we talked about they were somewhere in, I want to say Namibia, and it's outhouse situation. Mm-hmm. Went to the bathroom, heard something, and a black mamba came out between their legs.
Nope.
I don't know the rules on snakes. If there's a rhyme,
if it's black, fight back.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's snake, run.
Quick.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that would be scary. I mean, certainly sitting down and having a spider or critter in your toilet is scary.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
do you check before you use the facilities?
I mean, not in my house, but I have been in places where I do check. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I have more bad experiences with drains and sinks and stuff coming out than I do toilets.
Cool.
Thankfully, I guess.
Yeah.
That you know of.
If this is a thing we're going to be thankful for. No toilet spiders.
Hashtag blessed.
No toilet bears.
Well, good. Yeah, I can say I probably don't. Maybe that's the privilege that I live in this world.
Yeah.
But I've also never used an outhouse in Alaska. And if it ever comes to that, I will be shining a flashlight on down.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Maybe just make sure your yurt has indoor plumbing.
Right.
Sure.
If you're going to have a yurt, at least splurge for the indoor plumbing.
Yeah, come on, dude.
Yeah.
For sure. All right, let's get to our main topic. We're back in the Bible. First Monday of the month, so we're back in the Bible.
Yes. New month.
New month, March.
Just cruising through 2021.
I know.
Like nobody's business.
Yes.
Might as well just welcome in 2025. It's basically here already.
Good news, COVID's still around.
Yes.
In 2025.
Right.
Oh.
Yikes.
Oh. All right, so today we're going to talk about the book of Samuel, part one.
Ooh, okay.
In our Bibles, it's called 1 Samuel, but in reality, Samuel is one book that was divided into two parts due to the length of scrolls.
Yeah. Convenience. Yeah. This one is really heavy. Let's make this two. It'll be easier to carry. Okay, that sounds like a good idea.
And
it's not like the first Samuel was disappointing, so he was killed off, and then another Samuel rose up.
Or the first Samuel was a huge hit. He was like, I got to write a sequel to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get in the studio here and bust out another Samuel. And it does tell a complete story, though. When whoever wrote it down on the scroll eventually ended it on, I would say, the best possible break between the two. But the Samuels, 1st and 2nd Samuel, we are only going to be covering Samuel part 1.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a very long book to do
together.
And
there's a lot happening.
There's a lot of good
action in the Samuels.
I'd say especially Samuel part 1. I think this was a fun read and fun for me to look at here.
Yeah.
But I'll mostly focus on three main characters.
Okay.
So first we're going to open with Samuel.
Do we get to guess about the other main characters?
Sure, if you'd like to.
I mean, I know who they are, but I feel like this could be fun.
How is it fun if you already know the answer?
Guessing.
Can you ask me a question I know the answer to?
David, show off.
Because I get to win. That's the key. Let's play a trivia contest where I know all the answers. That's my favorite kind of trivia.
All right, so Samuel, King Saul, and King David will be our three
competing
main
kings.
Characters.
Already I'm intrigued.
Yeah. Yes.
I've seen Game of Thrones. I know how that happens.
Yeah, I would say the Samuels have Game of Thrones-esque elements
they do.
To them. Yes.
It's about the, a lot of the Game of Thrones stuff comes in a second Samuel. A lot of the
well, there's a lot more kings. There's a lot more family drama in second Samuel.
Mm-hmm. But there's great stuff in first Samuel.
Yes.
Great story in first Samuel.
So we actually
less depressing than second Samuel.
Slightly less depressing, yeah.
So first Samuel, it picks up where Judges left off.
Mm-hmm.
So if you remember last month, we went over the book of Judges. Israel has these judges or kind of these part-time leaders rise up for a season, and then they usually fail. And then Israel gets back into bad habits, and then another judge rises up for a season. And so we have our last judge appearing in Samuel, and it's actually going to be Samuel. Samuel will be the last judge. Yes. But it opens with Samuel's mom, Hannah. Mm-hmm. And Hannah's got heartache and strife because she has no kids.
I get it.
Yeah, she wants a baby. And so she prays to God to give her a baby. And if God does grant her a child, she will dedicate him to the temple. And so she just wants to have a baby, and then he can go be trained in the temple on how to be a priest.
No, I've never considered this as like a counseling option, right? You know, people come because we talk to people all the time who are trying to have kids, who are struggling. Be like, hey, listen, if you're struggling to have a child, why don't you just offer your first child to God?
Right.
And, you know, they can come and live in the church and they'll be fine.
And do my dirty work.
and be raised up in the Lord. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
A church baby.
Yes. A church baby, right? I didn't know it was an option. That's all I'm saying.
An altar urchin.
Altar urchin?
Yes.
I did not know.
They just like leech onto the side.
It's not like a sea urchin.
Mermaid, sea urchins. Right. It's a very nautical themed episode. Yes.
Toilet bears.
So I can certainly, I'm sure there are plenty of women out there who can feel Hannah's pain.
Sure.
The desire to have a baby and unable to. I mean, my wife and I had to use fertility treatments to help aid in the baby making process, but we have a son. We did not give him to the church, though.
Slackers. So, where's the faith? Tell you what.
Some days I consider it, so I'm just going to drop him off.
Bye.
There's no card for me. You're going to the church.
That's right.
So Hannah sings a poem when she gets pregnant and has this baby. And so she sings this beautiful poem that opens 1 Samuel that kind of expresses the themes of 1 and 2 Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
That God opposes the proud and exalts the humble. That despite human evil, God is still at work. And one day, God will raise up this special king to deliver his people.
All right.
So those are the things that are the themes that are really driving a lot of the narrative going forward, not only in Samuel's, but kind of for Israel's history, these types of things. All right, so Samuel goes to the temple. He lives with Eli.
Really quick, I think it's worth noting that Hannah does not typically get counted among the prophets, but I think this is a place where clearly Hannah does this, Elizabeth does this in the Gospels as well, where this is a woman giving prophecy, a woman speaking out of this, you know, place of this is the prophetic word that I'm bringing from the Lord in this moment. And it's often called like Hannah's song or Hannah's hymn.
Or poem.
It's, right, or poem, right. It's a prophecy. Like we should call it what it is. It's a prophecy.
Well, oftentimes prophecies are poems and things like this
also
as well.
True.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that it's a hymn or poem does not make it a prophecy.
It's a heck of a lot more of prophecy things. Than Jonah did, just saying.
He got a whole book.
Yeah.
True.
He wasn't even good at it.
I know.
Yes. Rereading this intro to Samuel, I kind of, you know, forgot the importance of Hannah. I mean, I may have been able to answer this on a trivia question, but I really enjoyed Hannah's journey. And I thought, you know, my heart broke for her wanting this child. And her poem is really beautiful and nice. Mm-hmm. And the themes she puts out there are themes that are really powerful for what we're going to do going forward. So then we're going to spend some time, before we get to the kings of Israel, we got one more story.
Oh, okay.
That's the Israelites, and they are arrogant and proud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they are fighting against their one of our classic villains in the Bible, the Philistines.
Good old Philistines. Yeah. Those uncircumcised Philistines.
Yes, they're one of the big villain tribes that the Israelites go through. The Canaanites, the Philistines, any others that you remember?
Moabites. They come up against them. Gideonite? No, that's not right.
Gibeonites?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, but Philistines and Canaanites are kind of these two big tribes.
Philistines are big in Samuel and Kings.
Yeah. And that they're always going up against, you know. And
it's like the coyote to the Israelites roadrunner. Sure. They're always there.
Yeah. So the Israelites are at war with the Philistines.
Right.
And they're not praying to God. They're not making their sacrifices. They're very arrogant and proud about their military ability, which they should not be.
Right.
And they bring out the Ark of the Covenant. And we really have not discussed the Ark yet on this podcast. We blew right past the Ark. Yeah. So
should we talk about what the Ark is?
Yeah, let's talk about
that. Yeah, please.
All right, so if you haven't seen Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones, please go watch that.
Pause this.
For all historical information that you need. No, so the Ark of the Covenant was a piece in Deuteronomy. God commands Moses and the Israelites to make this Ark. And when we think of Ark, we're not talking about the boat like Noah made. We're thinking of a container. It's a rectangular box. It has an elaborate lid and everything like this. Very specific dimensions on what it's supposed to do. And inside the Ark are the tablets on which God has given the Ten Commandments. Okay. That's what's carried inside the Ark. I think there are some other things that are maybe put inside the Ark eventually as well, but the primarily is the tablets.
Yes,
the
I know a few of them.
You know a few of the others?
I do. They have some manna.
I thought you were saying I know a few of the commandments.
I do.
Good work. Yeah.
Brag. Yes, the man is in there, and I believe Aaron's staff is also placed inside the Ark. Yes.
I can't speak Moses to that one way or the other. So sure, Aaron's staff is in there. Why not?
It's in there.
But at multiple points, the Ark is used as kind of the focal point of this is where God's presence dwells. Mm-hmm. And so there are stories, some of these stories haven't happened yet, but there are stories of people accidentally touching the Ark and dying from God's power. There are places where the Ark leads Israel into battle, and they win those incredible battles that they shouldn't be able to win, and they attribute it to the Ark's power and things like that. And this is how the myth that comes up in Indiana Jones developed, is that the Ark had this incredible power of God, that if you controlled the Ark, you controlled the power of God. When, in fact, that's the same downfall that Israel is experiencing here. It's not about controlling the Ark. It's about trusting God's power trusting God to go into battle on your behalf.
Yeah, because the Israelites are arrogant and proud. So they bring out the Ark, kind of like it's their lucky rabbit's foot, their magical talisman that they're
going to... Their idol, we might say.
And their idol, yes.
That seems to be a theme.
But they're turning God into an idol, something that they can control.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to lead it out into battle, and therefore, the Ark is here. We've won when the Ark is here, so we're going to win.
Right,
yeah,
obviously. Yes.
Even without including God in this process, but by having this magical talisman... So they lose. They lose this major battle.
And the Ark is stolen.
And the Ark is stolen. And the Philistines take the Ark. They capture God, essentially, what the Israelites would think. They capture where God dwells. They place it with their idol, Dagon. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right. But,
Sure. I don't think we have any Philistines who are going to.
He's a merman.
Yes.
Just saying.
I don't think he is, but
he's like a sea god.
Yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah.
I mean, the Philistines were a seafaring people, so that it was a god of water. Yeah.
So
I don't know about merman, but it was like a half fish animal thing.
We'll Google it later.
Sure. Merman. Okay, merman. So they bring it there, and in the night, that idol collapses and falls apart. The head falls off.
Sure.
And they open the tent, and there's the Ark, and their god is destroyed in front of it. And they're like, uh-oh.
Yeah. That's probably not a good sign.
And then all the Philistines start getting sick, and a plague goes through their camp. And they're like, ugh. We gotta get rid of this thing.
Yeah.
This is bad news.
Yep.
And so they take the Ark back to the Israelites and say, we don't want it.
Yeah.
We captured it, but we're good. And so I think this is kind of showing this one of the themes of Hannah, despite human evil, God is still at work. So despite the Israel's arrogance, despite the evil of the Philistines, God is still going to do whatever God wants to do. Mm-hmm. And that the reminder that God is telling the Israelites, I don't really need you guys. You don't need to fight my battles.
Right.
Like, you need me. That's how this is supposed to work. And if you're going to be proud and arrogant, you're not going to necessarily have access to me. And I think this is a powerful moment. But Israel kind of sees these things. And their natural conclusion is, okay, then, we need a king.
Yep. God wants us to rely on God, so we need a king.
Yeah. Logical that makes conclusion. A lot of sense.
Yes. So they get to Samuel again, the last judge, the last leader, who's also a prophet slash leader. And they say, Samuel, get us a king. Mm-hmm. We need a king.
Yep.
Samuel's like...
So that we can be like other nations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's their quote there.
Yeah. And Samuel's like, nah. Like, I don't think you do.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah. We good. You don't need no kings. And so Samuel goes to God and is like, these people just keep bugging me for a king. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
And God's like, you know what? Fine. They want the king this bad? You give them a king.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You give them their king to rule over them, and you can tell them, we'll get you a king. You're not going to like it.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite parts of 1 Samuel is this piece where God's basically saying, here are all the reasons you don't want a king. And Israel being like, no, it's cool. We still want a king.
We're fine with it. Yeah.
And God's like, wait. The king's going to take your young men and throw them into battle, and they're all going to die. And he's going to take your young women, and they're going to be part of his harem and make them bakers and all this other stuff. And
bakers.
I don't know. That's what it says. And they're like, no, it's fine. We want that. And they're like, well, he's going to tax your land, and the king's going to, like, you know, take all your stuff, and you're not going to be able to, you know, like, no, it's going to be great. Israel, where do we sign? Yeah, we want a king over and over. And, I mean, it's God giving Israel over to its own desires. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we've covered this directly on the podcast. We kind of hit around it a couple points. But this is, you know, a recurring theme that God is... It's not necessarily that God is punishing Israel at this point or at other points, but it's that God eventually just gives people over to the desires of what we've said. Right. Okay, like, you want this? Okay, that's what you're going to have. And then you're going to suffer natural consequences that come from that. And that's,
right. Like, not that it's necessarily a punishment, but it's just not the intended way, path that God had. Or it's not the best path.
Yeah, I think an adage I've heard is, like, there are two types of people. Those who say, God's will be done, and those who God says to... fine, then have it your way kind of a thing. So this is like God just saying, okay, fine. You just have it your way and we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert, everything God says will come true.
Yeah.
So, and so they want a king. And so Samuel says, fine. So God leads Samuel to Saul, the first king of Israel. And the second of our three main characters that we're going to talk about. And Saul looks the part. He's tall. He's strong. He's good looking. And not just tall. He's like really, really tall.
Are we still doing dream casting for our
movie? Yeah, let's do some. So first Samuel. First we got to cast Samuel. Or Hannah, right? We missed Hannah.
Oh, sure.
You know, who could play, Hannah, you know, kind of a sad woman who's desperate for a child. What do we think here?
Maybe we don't cast desperate for a child as part of the typecast.
Dream I feel like casting,
that,
yeah.
Well, that's
the character that's playing.
Someone who can carry that emotion.
Yeah.
Ooh, man.
I would say I like a Kate Blanchett for this.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah.
I think she would be able to be, you know, you can sense the heartache in her, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's my vote. Any other contenders?
I haven't watched any good movies for a really long time. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Kate Blanchett it is. Curious, yes.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah.
All right. So then we have Samuel. You know, at this point, he's a little bit older, probably in his, you know, 50s, 60s.
Woody Harrelson.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Really? That's right to me.
Wow. All right. Interesting. Yeah.
I can't think of the guy's name. Anthony Hopkins. That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay. I like Anthony Hopkins a lot. Yeah. It's just,
Anthony Hopkins is like 80-something, though.
Well, I mean...
Not to say there's anything wrong with being 80-something.
Let's do Anthony Hopkins from like Silence of the Lambs days.
Sure. That feels right.
Yeah.
Or at least...
that age range, Anthony Hopkins.
Or at least Thor 1 age range, right? Right. Like when he plays...
Yeah, Thor 1 would be good.
When he plays Odin.
I was one of the more eccentric... withdrawn profit route.
Okay.
I think Woody Harrelson could carry that very well.
Samuel doesn't quite nail the eccentric withdrawn profit that some of the other prophets do.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then finally,
so I think we got to save Woody Harrelson. I think there's some other prophets.
There's who definitely
Saul, clearly.
Or, there's definitely going to be a guy out there eating stuff in the woods, in the jungle, and that could be
Saul.
Oh, you have a Saul. All right.
Yes. And we have Saul. Who you got?
Jason Momoa.
I don't know who Jason Momoa is.
What?
That's, I mean, I probably do, but I don't know who it is.
That would be Aquaman. It would be
Game of Thrones.
Khal Drogo. Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I could see it.
He's a little bit too, I don't know. At least as like Aquaman and Game of Thrones, he's like, he's more grunty than I think Saul is. Like, he's, you know.
You don't think Saul is grunty?
Maybe not, you know, your picture of Saul, you know. Mine was Christian Bale, you know, so.
Mm. Oh,
okay.
Where is she?
Yes. Yeah, I could see that. All right,
well, moving on. All right, so Saul's called, he's tall, good-looking, strong, but he's also dishonest.
Right.
He's also, he doesn't have integrity, and he will not acknowledge his own mistakes, not to his people, to Samuel, to God. Like, he refuses to kind of deal with his own shortcomings.
It's almost like he's a parallel of an idol for Israel, too, because he looks really good on the outside, looks the part, and is, you know, falls really short.
Yeah. Hashtag nailed it.
Yes. And so we have this very interesting story, this calling of Saul, where Samuel brings Israel together. He's like, okay, you guys want a king? I got you a king. Let's bring him on out. And it's like this, it's got a lot of pageantry to this, where they're like, okay, what tribe is he from?
Like, Mr. Israel.
Roll call. He's from this tribe. Yep. And they're like, ooh. And like, what family is he from? They play the drums.
Narrow
like,
down.
He's from this tribe. And then they're like, okay, what? Who is he? And he's like, all right, it's Saul. And the people look, and there is no Saul.
It's empty.
It's like
big cymbal crash, curtains pull back.
There's
empty
no
stage.
Saul. There's no Saul behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, let's go find our king. And they find him buried under the luggage.
Right.
Hiding. He's got like suitcases on top of him, and they find him and hide him, and they bring him out, and he's really, really tall and strong and good looking, and they're like, ooh, that's our king.
Yeah.
But he's hiding in the luggage.
Right, yeah. So I've never selected a king. I don't know if either of you have ever been a part of this, but I'm pretty sure that if I were in a part of a culture that were selecting our king, the guy hiding under the luggage
would
not
be your first pick.
Like, that's not the symbol that I'm looking for. Right. Like, yeah. I want the guy who's hiding out over there.
How we almost landed on the prairie chicken for our national bird instead of the American eagle.
We almost landed on a prairie chicken?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank goodness, right?
Like, I thought we almost landed on a turkey. I didn't know anything about a prairie chicken.
Yeah.
Wow, I mean, like, so he does look the part, but, like, the moment of his kingship starting, hiding in the luggage. But they are impressed, because he is a head taller than everybody else. So, I mean, that's pretty good.
So, check.
Yeah,
they're like, okay, fine.
Well, because, right, I mean, they're thinking about a king. King's job, lead us into battle. So who do we want to lead us into battle? Somebody who's tall.
The most likely one to get shot from a distance.
Well, the biggest, strongest
biggest
one.
Strongest, yeah. Which is going to come back when we get to David and Goliath, right? Because now we have Goliath coming, who's this giant. And we'll get to that in a minute.
Sure.
I'm
going to guarantee they did not ask the women about this.
No, they did not.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah.
No offense, but nope, they didn't.
No. So quickly we see Saul rise as a military leader.
He
is tall. He is strong. He can lead the army. But we also see him disobey Samuel and God a few times.
Mm-hmm.
That Samuel says, hey, I'm going to meet you there in a week. The week comes and he's like, hey, there's no Samuel here. I'll do the sacrifice myself because we got to get on with this.
It's fine,
And Samuel's like, no. That's not how this works.
Mm-hmm.
And then God and Samuel talk a little bit, and God's like, and Samuel's like, Saul's just no good. I don't know what to do. And God's like, you're right. We're going to get a new king.
Gonna do it again. Take two.
Yep.
Take two. And he's like, Saul's lineage is done. It doesn't matter how good or not good his kids are. We're done with the family of Saul. We're starting over.
Mm-hmm.
And so Samuel gets sent out to a new king, and this one will be David.
Mm.
All right, so who do we have as our dream cast for David?
Oh, got a young, ruddy. I think ruddy is how he's described in the...
Sure.
Yeah.
Ruddy.
I have one.
What do you got?
I got a Tom Holland, the Spider-Man character.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah, he's young, but you know, I could see you could have him play 15-year-old David and 30-year-old David, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Who's the main character in Ready Player One? The Wade guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's got kind of that... Ruddy.
that ruddy energy.
He's ruddy. Right. Yeah.
But there's something different about David than Saul. David is just a farm boy, and he's from the lowest tribe and the lowest family, and he's the youngest in that family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when Samuel gets there and he goes to Jesse, David's dad, he's like, hey, one of your kids is going to be king. And Jesse brings out the oldest. And Samuel's like, this guy looks pretty good. And God's like, no, pass.
Mm-hmm.
You swipe, what is it, left or right?
I don't know. Yeah.
Swipe left.
I don't know which way,
And then he brings up the next son, and the next son, and the next son. And finally, they're like, Samuel's like, do you have any more kids? And he's like, well, we got David.
Yeah.
he's on the field.
Right.
Because he's not important enough to be here.
Right.
So. Yeah, well, he's not in the running. So Samuel goes out there.
Midlife crisis, maybe.
Sees David and is like, God, are you sure about this? So I don't know what it is about David, except I guess he's young.
And small.
He's probably a little nerd.
Probably a little
nerd.
We
need to rethink our typecasting.
I think Tom Holland works. Yes. Peter Parker is a nerd.
He's maybe too cute to be a little nerd.
Maybe
though.
Too cute. Maybe David is not very attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He's
okay.
Ready. We've established. Yes. David is ready. I don't know what that means.
Right.
That's what he is.
Can we Google ready real quick?
All right. I think it works. But we're moving on. So Samuel, this awesome thing. God says, look, man looks on the outside. God looks at the heart. Mm-hmm. And so Samuel anoints.
David's cardiovascular system is on point.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. No cholesterol, no blockages.
Speaking of nerds.
So Samuel anoints David in the field right then and there.
Yep.
But we have this kind of weird dichotomy, right? We have a king.
Uh-oh.
We have an anointed king.
But we want this guy.
Who's really king?
Yeah.
Who's really in charge? And that's going to be the back half of 1 Samuel, is this tension between these two characters, Saul and David.
Mm-hmm. Some understandable tension.
Yeah, understandable.
I mean, I've been made king, and now you're making somebody else king. That's not cool.
Right.
That's not how this is supposed to work.
And Saul is an adult man. David is a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this puts these two kind of like, Saul is not really willing to step aside, and yet he still kind of wants to follow the will of God, at least to some extent. So he's not just willing
that it benefits him.
To just execute David here
right.
and there. And so this leads us into kind of maybe the most famous story in the
mm-hmm.
Old Testament, or maybe even the whole Bible.
Mm-hmm.
David versus Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly something that I think if you've never cracked a Bible in your life, like the idea or concept of David versus Goliath has probably seeped into your consciousness.
Right. The little guy takes on the giant.
Through social discussion. I mean, in sports, in movie analogies, like
mm-hmm.
this concept is there.
Yeah.
Goliath is the giant of the Philistines, and they're at war with the Israelites because they're kind of in a perpetual state of war. And the Israelites are like, oh, you know what? I don't really want to go fight the Philistines.
Especially don't want to go fight that guy.
And the Israelites are not really an army. They're kind of conscripted soldiers. None
mm-hmm.
of them have weapons. The Bible even makes it clear, like, nobody has a sword except Saul.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Like, he's the only guy with a sword. Everybody's got farming tools.
Did he do that on purpose? I feel like he did.
Yeah. And so they're at war, and Goliath is the champion of the Philistines, and they make this idea of, like, we'll send out our best fighter, you send out your best fighter.
Right.
Whoever wins just wins. We don't.
Which was a common ancient practice. This was not new
yes.
to the biblical. I mean, this is
right.
something that happened in the ancient world. It's like, yeah, we don't need to all die. Just one-on-one.
Sure.
And we'll just call it good at that.
So I think in the movie Troy,
yep.
with
mm-hmm.
Brad Pitt,
yep.
this practice is demonstrated. Brad Pitt
He's playing
as
Achilles yep.
comes out and he fights the whatever no-name guy
yeah.
defeats him easily.
The giant from the wherever, yeah.
Yeah, so this
yeah.
is the idea. We'll send out our best guy. You send out your best guy. Whoever wins, they just win.
Yep.
And then we'll just capture everybody else. And so Goliath comes out from the Philistine side, and he's a giant man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's dream cast Goliath here. Who plays? Mm-hmm. We need some special effects to get there.
Andre the Giant.
He's passed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is dream casting. In my dream world, we can
bring
back Andre
yeah.
the Giant.
He seems such a gentle giant, though. I think in this
fine.
One, you want...
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Okay, maybe The Undertaker, if you're...
I don't know who The Undertaker is.
I don't know any of these people.
These are all wrestlers, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is interesting. I don't know, right? Who could be this giant villain? Again, maybe
I'm
Thanos.
Giving you two great options.
You know, Josh Brolin from
Thanos is all CGI. You can't bring us.
I think you could. You could. We
you
have
could CGI.
Yeah, we could.
Well,
we
then you can CGI anybody into it.
Bring back Andre the Giant.
Fine, Andre the Giant plays Goliath.
He's not happy about it. Fine.
And he's like, okay, send out your champion, and the usual ones are all like, all
right.
Nope.
Yep. Hard pass.
No, I don't think so.
I need to wash my hair.
Yeah, and they basically look to Saul. I mean, he's their king.
Right.
He's, and
he's the only one with a sword.
He's got a sword. He's the biggest guy. And Saul's like,
nope.
Nah.
Yeah.
And so they wait and wait and wait. And every day, Goliath comes out and is like, let's do this. And the Israelites like, maybe tomorrow.
Yep.
And finally, David shows up and he's got like a picnic lunch for his brothers because they've been at war for a while. And so Dad sent David to the front lines. To bring him some lunch.
Some food. Yeah.
Some food. And David hears Goliath say this, and he's like, what's happening? Why isn't anybody go fighting him? Mm-hmm. And they're like, because look at him. Look at him. And I've got, yeah, that guy's over there with a giant sword and spear and shield. And they're like, I've got a rake. You know, like, it's kind of sharp that I sharpened on a rock. You know, like,
it's a really good rake. Yeah, so, my best rake.
Yeah, like, I don't think so. And David says, take me to the king. And so he goes to Saul and's like, I'll fight. I am willing to go fight this mm-hmm. dude. And Saul's like, okay.
Wow.
Yeah, why not? What do you got to lose at this point?
Just the country, but whatever.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, Saul doesn't know that David has been anointed.
That is correct. This is their first interaction. So, but this is so weird, right? Like, all these are like men. David is listed as a boy.
Ready.
And they're like, okay. Yeah, send out the boy.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of an interesting fight.
It's ridiculous.
So Saul's like, okay, you can take my armor, you can take my sword. They don't fit. David's like,
no. He can barely stand up in them.
He's like, this doesn't work.
He looks and feels ridiculous.
Yeah. And then David, I think, says this really interesting. He says like, okay, look, I'm a shepherd. Lions and bears have attacked the sheep before. And when that happens, I've chased them down and hit them in the face with my staff until they let go of the sheep and drove them away.
Right.
And you're like,
hold on a second.
Whoa. What now?
Sounds like a very practical life skill.
So it's not like David is just like,
you know.
How do you deal with
David?
Toilet
would have been, I was going to say, well prepared.
If David was in that outhouse, he's coming out of that house and he's like, I used the bathroom, okay? Like, it was fine.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So David is already, wow. Okay, David's already pretty impressive. So he goes out there, he takes a sling and 5 stones. And
not a slingshot, which was forever my misunderstanding of the story.
Yeah, it's like a Dennis the Menace slingshot.
Right, this is like you swing it and...
Yes. Which is an ancient weapon and a valuable ancient weapon. A ranged weapon is important.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm.
So he goes out there with his sling and Goliath is like, no. This is a joke, right? He's like, fine. Goliath suits up, comes out there. David charges at him, drives the sling, the rock into Goliath's head and then cuts off Goliath's head with his own sword.
After Goliath falls over.
Yes. Yeah. And wins the day. The Philistines did not keep up their end of the bargain and they all ran off.
Right. Well, that's another part of the story. Right.
Yeah.
But this is kind of the real intro to like, wow, David, look at this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And all of Saul's faults look like all of David's strengths, right? Like, he is humble. He seeks to serve God. Even if he does not look the part of the king, he is willing to fight for God's honor and the people. And then David becomes a general in Saul's army, and he starts winning all the battles. And he got winning all the fame. And now David comes home to Jerusalem, and people are cheering for David. They're saying, Saul, man, he killed hundreds of people. David's killed thousands, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
Saul is not okay with that.
Yeah. So Saul starts hating David.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
this is sometimes referred to as Saul's descent into madness.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. David's rise in power and popularity mirrors Saul's descent into madness, and Saul eventually says, "I've got to kill this kid.
Yeah,
I've got to kill David. I cannot." He's a threat to me.
Mm-hmm.
And Saul now knows David's been anointed king. He will become king at one point. So he's finally had it. I'm going to kill David. David flees with his band of merry men, his loyal soldiers, into the wilderness. And Saul hunts for him all over Israel to try to find him. And a few times, Saul and David interact in this hunt for one another. Where Saul one time goes into a cave to use the bathroom. David's in
toilet
the cave.
Bear.
Right.
David is a toilet bear.
Big toilet bear energy.
And David sees him and his men are like, you gotta go kill this dude. He's trying to kill you.
This is it. This is your shot.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no. And so David crawls up, you know, army style, I guess, cuts off a piece of Saul's robe and crawls away while Saul is using the toilet.
Wow.
And then Saul leaves the cave, and David comes out and says, Saul, I could have killed you. Here's your robe. I didn't. I have no problem with you.
Right.
I'm not your enemy.
Yeah.
Like, it's not my fault. God chose me and not you. And Saul, even at that point, is like, wow. And he even acknowledges, like, I really would have killed you.
Yeah.
If I saw you go to the bathroom, I would have killed you.
You'd be dead right now. Yeah.
And he relents and says, okay, I'll go home. And he's home for a bit.
Then it goes back.
Then it goes back right. out. And this so another instance happens, and this happens over and over again. And it ends with Saul leading Israelite into battle kind of foolishly and arrogantly. And they get overtaken. Saul is wounded, and he tells his shield bearer, I'm going to die here. I know this. You should just kill me because I don't want to get captured. The shield bearer refuses, so Saul commits suicide. And then the shield bearer says, uh-oh, he commits suicide. And then that's how kind of 1 Samuel ends.
It's not a pretty picture.
No.
Yes. So 1 Samuel is really all about the rise and fall of Saul. And we get the rise of David that will continue into 2 Samuel. And spoiler alert, the fall of David.
Ooh.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, wow.
Because we had that theme mentioned at the beginning of the top. The king is coming. A real powerful king. And so first, is it Saul is the question. And we're quickly sold no. And here, at this point, we're like, maybe it's David.
Huh?
This really could be the guy. He seems like the guy.
Toilet bears for president.
Yes.
Did you say toilet bears for president?
No.
You know, if you're running for political office, Elise,
should I use the toilet bear?
I want you to use that as part of your slogan.
Okay. Toilet bear 2022.
Yes. Yeah. It's like when Sarah Palin was running. She had like I'm a grizzly bear kind of a thing.
Right.
Mama Grizzly.
Mama Grizzly.
I'm a toilet bear.
I'm a toilet bear.
Big toilet bear energy.
I appreciate that. So.
Yikes. Yeah.
So that's how things are going here at the end of 1 Samuel. So any other thoughts?
I love Samuel's arc overall. I think this is where, you know, we really kind of move from the Bible. We're moving just from this kind of story of Israel as like, how does Israel come into existence? And now we're moving into the story of how is God going to work through his people to reach the entire world? And then that's, so I just love where the story starts to move for us as we're moving through the larger narrative of Scripture.
Yeah, I like a lot of the allegories in it. Like I said, the allegories sort of Saul as the idol with the Ark of the Covenant story that comes before that. And I like the inclusion of Hannah's story as well at the beginning.
Sure. Shout out to Hannah.
That's right, yeah. Also, we get like the downfall of Eli in the beginning too that we didn't talk about.
Yeah, we kind of yada yada over a few things here.
It's a long book, okay?
There's some very interesting stuff going on in Saul that we did not go into. I mean, there's witches at one point.
Yeah, sure.
Why not?
It is a super interesting read. We're not judging the Bible for like literary reasons, but I think it is one of the more well-written books.
That we've talked about so far. It's definitely some of the best narrative writing as far as like telling a story. Yeah, and, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. I would 100% agree. I think if you're reading a book from start to finish, 1 Samuel, you can't go wrong with this one. This might be the best one. I mean, the idea of like, it has major themes that are introduced early. You get to see those played out, and it's really interesting. Like, it doesn't delve into what we would consider in a modern audience kind of unimportant details like some of the other books we've covered. You know, again, they're very important to those. That time frame for us was like how this world looks, or let's do a rundown of some laws right now.
Right.
It really is kind of, I think I tease this, all killer, no filler. It's like one story after another that is really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's do our rating system.
Ooh.
1 to 0 to 2 thumbs.
Gotta stretch them out. I haven't used them for a while. Hold on.
Yeah.
All right, ready? Big reveal on three.
Big reveal.
One, two, three.
1.5 David also gave it 1.5, and I gave it 2 thumbs.
This is one of Patrick's 2 thumbs.
This is one of my 2 thumbs. I for the same reasons that we've said before, as a story, I think it is the most complete story in the Bible.
Yeah.
You get a lot of detail about the characters. They're very real and fleshed out. I love Jonah. Who Jonah is not the point of those stories. You know, I think we know more about Saul than we do about Abraham. And Saul's not even, and Saul's the, at best, the second most important character in the story. Yeah. You know, so I think this is an incredibly interesting read. I don't think 2 Samuel will be a 2 thumb book for me. I think it's not quite as interesting. Spoiler. but I do think the first part, again, it's if you've never read 1 Samuel, I would recommend.
Yeah. It is interesting because I feel like we know a lot more about who the characters are as people in 1 Samuel than we do any of the other books we've talked about so far. It's just we gloss over what they did sort of high level, but here you learn about their flaws and and their character, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
Now, and this is where we get into some of the trouble where we look to the Bible as like, oh, well, these are the biblical heroes that we're supposed to idolize and like mm-hmm. lift up. And we forget the downfalls to these characters. Right. And you know that's the beauty of the First Samuel story. Because with, you know, with Moses, you have to look really hard to see like how Moses screwed up. Because right. what Moses screwed up was by hitting a rock and getting water out of it when right. he wasn't supposed to.
Right.
And you're kind of like, well, he was caring for his people, got it. And right. But like, no, that was like Moses' downfall. But for David, it's like, oh, we get it. Like, right. we know why that. And with yeah. Saul, we're like, oh, yeah, we get that. We, right. And so there is a real sense of this is where we can look to be reminded the Bible is not lifting up moral or characters of moral virtue that we're supposed to idolize and say that's who we should be like. The Bible right. is lifting up characters of flawed nature who are redeemed by God. Mm-hmm. And that's what we should be like. We should be people of mm-hmm. our own flaws who are redeemed by God.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a very fun read. Even if you're like, I have no interest in Jesus or God. Right. I think there's value to First
Samuel. Spoiler,
yeah.
Jesus isn't even in the story. Yeah. So that's fine.
I think you would enjoy reading First Samuel. I think it's a really interesting book. And it also introduces David, one of the Mount Rushmore characters of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the foremost important people that we would look at.
Did we say David is number four? Is that what we said?
We said
Abraham and Moses.
And then David would be third. David. I don't think we've gotten to the fourth yet.
Okay.
Oh. Yes. Spot is still open.
Spot is still open, yeah. Unfortunately, spoiler alert, it will be a man.
Yeah.
Sorry, Deborah.
Yeah. No, come on.
That's the world that they lived in, and that's the stories we get, you know. Mm-hmm. But,
I don't know. I feel like I can make an argument that Mary should be up there.
If we're doing it on the Old Testament, Mary's
just
not
kidding.
In the Old Testament.
No, I heard Bible.
Over Jesus. <Right. laughs> We got one spot left, and you're like, you know, Jesus is great and all, but where's Mary?
Jesus is busy at God's right hand, okay?
He can't be on Mount Rushmore. He's busy.
All right, that is First Samuel.
All right. Yeah. Well, hey, if you liked what you heard today, we hope that you are doing well wherever you are, whether that's recovering from a snowstorm or still living in snow if you're in one of those parts of the country. But we hope that you're enjoying this podcast and all the episodes. You can find us at beyondsundaypodcast.com and wherever delightful podcasts are available for your listening consumption.
All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.